session number 9552, reel 1.
Mr. Basil Farrer, Reel 1. Could you tell me something about your background before you enlisted in 1913, Mr. Farrer?
Yes, well, I was a very young boy at the period before I enlisted. In point of fact, I was 15 years of age. I was working. At the time, I was living with an aunt and uncle in Bradford. The uncle was employed by the railway, and as a consequence, I had a job on the railway too. In those days, I don't know whether this is now, Bradford had two football clubs, Bradford City and Bradford Park Avenue. And right opposite Bradford's Park Avenue football field, which was divided into, it was also the other side of the pavilion, was Yorkshire Cricket Field. There was a little station. The staff was the station master, myself, and two porters. And I alternated with the station master for duties. I'd be on booking clerk, collecting the tickets and so forth, and he would come on and overlap. In fact, I was there. I remember one day particularly, it was when Bradford City played Bradford Park Avenue in one of the semi-finals for the English Cup, the year that Bradford City won the cup, as a matter of fact. I think it was 1911. And that trains were coming in, and I was supposed to collect them, and they just went through. However, as I say, I was living with this aunt and uncle, and we had as neighbours a family. There was a boy, his father, and his older sister. The boy's name, I can give it because I don't suppose he's still alive. He was older than me, and I don't suppose any of the family. So I refer to him as Ernest, but his name was Ernest Shepherd. He was our immediate neighbour, and in spite of the difference in our ages, he was 3 years older than me. We were pals, and we used to go out together for walks. Incidentally, I should have mentioned that Ernest was always at loggerheads with his sister. Always, she was a little older than him, and she didn't replace the mother. The mother's possibly dead, I suppose. But he was always at loggerheads. Anyhow, one evening, we used to go to a nearby park called Little Horton Park. And in addition to swings for kiddies, there were these parallel bars and rings where we used to exercise, you know, pass the time like that. One evening, he turned up in a terrific temper. He'd had another argument with his sister. He said, "I'm going to join the army, Basil. Will you come with me?" "Of course," said, "of course." And I will say this, why I said it, of course, it was in the back of my mind, because ever since being a very young boy, I'd often heard the remark, speaking of me, by people, "He'd make a fine soldier. I was so sturdy and upright." I've not grown much since, because a year before I did join the army, I had both legs broken, both thigh bones. And that must have stopped my growth, because from then on, my body grew, but not my legs. But so I'm much the same. So, anyhow, I was 15. So next morning, instead of going to work...
Before we go on to the actual recruitment, it seems strange that you had a job and that you were so willing to just leave your job and join the army. Could you tell me a little more about why you felt that way?
It was in my nature. You heard of Nancy Mitford in one of her characters refers to her mother as the bolter. I'd run away before. As a small child, I'd run away. I'd run away from home, as children do. And even a year before that, I'd run away when I was 14. I went down to London. When I got down to London, a boy of 14, I had my fire down, but I had my fire back. Arriving in London, a little boy, I don't know how, but I must have finished up in some doss house somewhere, but the next morning I realised it was, and I looked on outside the underground, there was maps, and I noticed at the top York Road, a station. I thought I'd better go back home, but I had my fare. I decided to walk. So I walked, set off walking, and incidentally, I won't go right through all that, but I did walk as far as Leicester when I was picked up by a gentleman who'd seen me earlier in the morning, and then at night, coming back in his trap, asked me what I was doing, and I told him I was walking home, and he took me home, gave me a meal. He said, how much money I took? He said, why didn't you take a train? I said, I hadn't got enough money, and I was using what little I had for food. So he took the money, added to it, and put me on the train for Bradford and home. So this explanation is mainly that I was a bolter. And as I say, this army, people saying I'd make a fine soldier, I probably had that idea in mind.
What did people think of the regular army at this time? What was its reputation?
Well,
before the war,
it was very much as Kitchener describes it, and it's Tommy this and Tommy that, and chuck him out, the brute, but it's savoury his country when the guns be. That was the opinion in just before the war, I think, and right from the South African. You know that thing, Tommy this and Tommy that, and Tommy how's your soul, but it's savoury his country when the guns begin to roll. So there was even in certain parts down, I never came across them, I'd heard of them, and I've read of them, where dogs and soul and men in uniform not admitted. Restaurants and places like that, ordinary eating houses, and even in some pubs. And when I was stationed at...
We'll come to that later.
Yeah?
But this didn't put you off?
No.
This reputation?
No, I never thought of it. Never thought of it. He'd asked me, right, off we'll go. It was an adventure. Kids are doing things on impulse, I suppose. And as we'll come to it, the life just suited me. I liked it. Anyhow.
What was the actual procedure when you went to enlist?
Well, what happened was, after that evening, we arranged to meet next morning. Instead of going to work, we met next morning. And we went along to Bradford Moor Barracks. That was a barracks in the other side of Bradford. At the time, the barracks wasn't fully occupied by troops. There was a skeleton staff there, and as always, a recruiting sergeant was at the gate of the barracks, because outside there's posters. We used to have fancy uniforms in those days, you know. And we went along to Bradford Moor Barracks. Then, when the recruiting sergeant got hold of us, he asked Ernest his age. He was of age. Then I suddenly remembered I wasn't. And as I say, believe it or not, but the recruiting sergeant did. I was 15, and actually I was born on the 31st of August 1897. So on the 10th of May 1913, I was just over 15 and a half. I said I was 18 and a half. And that I would be 19, I would be 19 on the 2nd of January next.
Did he express any scepticism? Did he?
No, he didn't. Strange to say, he doubted Ernest, but now I must have been better built. I was sturdy. He didn't doubt it. And I said I was 19 on the 2nd of January next. Now, this is a remarkable thing. 2nd of January, I didn't know it at the time, happens to be my saint day, Saint Basil, which in some countries, particularly the one I lived in later, is kept up more than one's birthday, your saint day. So I'd chosen Saint Basil as my birthday, and Saint Basil has certainly looked after me. However,
were you given any sort of medical?
We were given a medical examination, a thorough medical examination, and we enlisted. Now, in those days, there was the regular army, there was territorials, and there was what they call special reserve. Now, the special reserve had replaced, I think it was a fellow called Aldane that reformed all this in 1906 or thereabouts, the old military. The Special Reserve, you enlisted for 6 years. That was the terms of enlistment. You did 6 months at the depot. Now, in my case, we enlisted into Alexander, Princess of Wales, Own Yorkshire Regiment. The nickname of the regiment in those days was the Green Howards. Now they're known officially as the Green Howards.
So this was the third Special Reserve.
But this was the third Special Reserve. Terms of enlistment, six years. The first 6 months at the depot, training.
What was the actual date that you were recruited, that you enlisted?
On the 10th of May, 1913. 10th of May, 1913.
Did they do anything else other than the medical examination and the chat with the sergeant? Was there any other procedure?
No, there was a medical officer there for the medical examination, but there was no question of... you hadn't to produce any document to substantiate anything you said with regard to age or even your name. In fact, lots of soldiers, particularly those who might have done something that they shouldn't have done, enlisted under false names. So you were not asked... You asked your name, and that name you kept whilst you were in the army, because I gave my correct name, Basil Farrer. And the only thing I altered was my age. I put 3 full years on.
Were you given the King's shilling?
Yes, we were given a shilling. And I remember the recruiting sergeant said, right, well, it's too late now for you to send you to Richmond. Come back in the morning. We said, well, we can't do that. We're away from home. Oh, he said, well, we can't accommodate you. He said, what we'll do, we'll send you to Halifax. Now, Halifax is a barracks there, the West Ridings, the Duke's regiment, the West Riding regiment. That was occupied by troops. So he sent us there, and for us to be dispatched the next day to Richmond. Now, I will add in, whilst there, Ernest's elder sister, when it transpired he didn't turn up, guessed at once what had happened. She probably got in touch with the recruiting people, and they told her we were at Halifax. Now, when we got to Halifax, we were given a meal, and then told we were free for the afternoon, and had to be in by, what do they call it now, tattoo. Well, in those days... Halifax, like Bradford and like Nottingham, like most big towns, had what they call music halls. And they used to be twice nightly. The first turn would finish about, I've forgotten the time it started, a couple of hours, and then there'd be a second turn. And we found that we had time for the first turn and to be able to get back to barracks in time. So we went to the first house of the palace, I've forgotten what they were showing. Anyhow, on the way back, as we were approaching the barracks, about 50 yards off, I said, Ernest, there's your sister. His sister was waiting. As we approached, she didn't go for him, she went for me. Because I'd got that reputation of a bolter. I'd run away before. And she blamed me for enticing him away. Well, it was the contrary. Ernest took advantage of that and into the barrack gate. And as soon as he was in, I scooted in and she couldn't follow us. That was that.
She didn't try and get in touch with the sentry on duty or anything like that?
Well, no. They wouldn't allow her in the barracks. We were enlisted men. She couldn't do nothing about it. So next morning, we were given the warrant for Richmond and reported up at Richmond. That is by train from Halifax, change at Darlington and onto Richmond. And Richmond was a very pretty little place. It was in those days. And the barracks was on the hill... reported up there.
What can you remember about the barracks, the layout of it all?
Well, there was a, as I say, it was just outside the town, up a hill, overlooking the town. In fact, in the other direction, you could see for miles. I seem to recollect it was even said that on a clear day you could see the towers of York Minster, so flat. So much so that when we, for instance, physical jerks, when we were running, we'd go to that part where it was flat. On route marches, we'd turn to the right towards the hills, the Pennine Chain, for the route marches. Anyhow, we reported, and I don't remember the exact detail, but the usual detail. Early morning, the bugle went, reveille. We were up, and there was a parade before breakfast, early morning parade, for about half an hour or so. Then we had breakfast. The food, from my recollection, was Spartan. It was enough, but it was very Spartan. Then, after the meal, you were on the barrack square, in charge of the NCOs, being taught the drill, marching.
What did you think of basic drill?
Well, to tell you the honest truth, I cannot say now what I thought at the time of it, but I took to it. It became very monotonous. There was one type of drill that I did think fully. We even had saluting drill. That is to say, when we weren't allowed out straight away, it was when we were able to march in a proper manner, because we had to pass the guard room, and the sergeant of the guard would examine you before you allow you out. I mean, in the evenings. We used to have a swagger stick. We'd carry it, all soldiers had it, and at the end a silver thing at the crest of the regiment, and white gloves. And we didn't go out in khaki, you went out in reds, but not with a helmet, but with a forage cap. The helmet and all that, the ceremonial dress was for church parades. We wore that on church parades. But to go out in town, you went out in your reds, that is, dark blue trousers with a red stripe, that was the usual infantry thing, and a red jacket, and in our regiment, the green howards, our facings, we call them, that's the cuffs and the collar, were green. And we were taught the drill.
The saluting drill you were telling me about.
Ah, yes. Well, what it would be, we would have a drummer in the middle, and we'd march round the square and stick under the arm and salute. See, salute properly. And in those days, if the officer was on your left, you saluted with your right hand. If he was on your right, you saluted with your left. Now I believe all that's changed. And yeah, that was that. But the other drill was just, we got used to it, we'd been marched and drilled. And a thing that I do remember too was well installed into us, the history of the regiment. Now, all regiments in those days, they had an esprit de corps. And it proved itself later, it's the honour of the regiment. Now, on the barrack square, there'd be the flagpole. On certain days, the flag would be on, be flown. If you happen to be crossing the square, the sergeant major, if a chance, I mean, could happen, he'd stop you. Where's the flag flying? If you didn't know, well, he'd give you a good telling off, and you better find out, because it was flown for the battle honours on the flag. You see, then flown flag. Anyhow.
Did you have actual lectures about the battalions, the regiment's history, or did you just have to pick it up?
No. I think we were taught it. And we had to go to school. We had to go to school because in those days, you used to shoot for your money. You enlisted a shilling a day. Now there's proficiency pay. First class proficiency pay was sixpence. To get that sixpence, you didn't straight away. It was after your recruit's training and towards the end of your first year's service when you joined the battalion. If you were a first class shot, but in addition to that, you had to have at least your third class certificate of education, which was because in those days there were lots of people illiterate, you know, and then again, without speaking disparagingly, there were people who. Very poor education, some none at all. So we had to go to school and be taught the ordinary, as you are at school. And I don't know how I managed it, but I skipped. A third class certificate education, and a first class shot, you got your sixpence a day. If you were a second class shot, you only got fourpence. Now, if you got your second class certificate of education, that took you as far as sergeant. That didn't mean you were sergeant straight away. You might have to wait years. because in regiments have an establishment, so many officers, so many sergeants, so many corporals, and you could be years before you got to a corporal because there was no vacancy. A man had to die or leave the service. And speaking of school, when the examination, there was an examination, I skipped the, I didn't bother about the second, the third, I went straight for the second and got it, goodness knows how. Then jumping ahead, when I eventually later in Aldershot, and I started studying for my first, which you had to have your first if you wanted to get above sergeant to get warrant rank, and then from warrant rank you could get commission rank. Now commission rank from the ranks was not like the ordinary officer, it's through the quartermaster. You became, first of all, regimental quartermaster. That was the final thing in the ranks. Then you were a warrant officer class. Well, then lieutenant quartermaster, then you can be captain quartermaster. Now Robertson, who was Sigs during First World War, he started like that. He finished up as quartermaster general and eventually field marshal. But I'm explaining, you had to go to school to get your, and even if you were a first class shot, if you didn't have your third class certificate, you didn't get your proficiency pay. So it was necessary to, we went to school.
When would this school, you said you got up and then you'd do the basic drill, when would the schooling be within the sort of daily routine, usually?
It would be in the afternoon, after the parades, say around about between 3 and 4.
Would you have a dinner, a lunch?
Oh, no, there was a dinner at midday, and then the next meal was tea. As I say, Spartan, mug of tea and bread and butter. I've forgotten whether we had anything with that or not. I've forgotten. It was very Spartan, the meals were, from my recollection. There was enough. They had to be, I mean, because we were very fit men. We were all very... Because if you weren't, and some feared it, because if you weren't fit... Now, for instance, on route marches... Now,
let's talk about route marches then.
Well, after you'd learnt I won't say use a rifle, but how to carry it and the different movements, present arms, slope arms, that was repeatedly drilled into you, and so you could march in the street with your rifle, then you, at least once a week, we'd go on route march in full pack, that is, with all your everything round you and your pack, I forgot the weight of it, but and your pouches, because you didn't have ammunition in your pouches. And I do remember,
this would be in khaki, would it?
In khaki, in khaki. You'd for fatigues. There's lots of fatigues too in the barracks. Called fatigue.
We'll come back to them actually, but sticking to the route marches.
Well, route marches. I remember being so young, and I was alongside men. I remember men offering to carry my rifle. Because it was a crime. What we call a crime in the army is a misdemeanour. And you were punished. Falling out on a route march, you'd be up in front of the company officer the next day and awarded 2 or 3 days CB. And when you got CB, you were confined to barracks and you lost 3 days' pay. So, occasionally, a chap would offer to carry my rifle. I have forgotten whether I allowed them to do so. I was, because I was, you know, determined to do it. But I do remember, because I'll jump ahead again, just to illustrate it, how pleased I was during the war to offer to carry other chaps, because I was well trained and the beer was coming out of them. Old soldiers had been drinking, and then when we were really going through it, when we did 30 and 40 kilometres a day with the full pack and the ammunition and all that, I carried many a man's rifle.
So the training was effective,
yes,
for a route.
And then, of course, there was the gymnasium.
Sticking to the route marches, how far would you go and how often would you get a rest?
You'd fall out for 10 minutes every hour. And all you'd do was just, on the roadside, you'd just undo your belt and let it slacken. You didn't take things off, because when you fall in, you've got to be in quick. Just slacken it off your shoulder, you see. Take the weight off your shoulder.
Would you stack rifles or would you keep your own rifle?
Oh, no, you keep your rifle. No.
How far would you go?
Oh, and I will be perfectly honest. it could have been 5, 6, or 8, or 10 miles. I honestly don't remember.
Did it increase as the training went on, as you, you know?
Up at Richmond, whilst during my initial training, I don't think it did. I don't think it did. They were just regular route marches, probably over 5 or 6 miles. Well, that's a bit with your pack, you know.
Would you sing, or...
No, strange to say, we didn't. That came during the war. I have no recollection of doing.
How did the local population react as you marched past them?
Just ignored us. I mean, it was just... well, when I say, I don't mean to say deliberately ignored, but they just didn't take any notice. I mean, they were used to us. They knew we were stationed there, and that was that.
Now, you mentioned the gymnasium, training in that. Could you go on to that now?
Well, in the gymnasium, you had a gym instructor, a sergeant, and he put you through it, all the various things. You had the parallel bars and bars on the wall and all the usual physical exercises and the jump, you know, that horse and things like that, and the rings. And it was it toughened you a bit. And bayonet fighting. We were taught bayonet fighting. Now, we were taught bayonet fighting not with your own rifle, with special rifles which had a kind of a thing. When you hit the fella, it entered into it with a spring. It was, wasn't sharp at the end. We were taught bayonet, and then if it, what was supposed to be the bayonet would enter into the barrel.
So you bayonet, you practiced it with other soldiers.
Yes. In the, the instructor would have you there with two men, and the very thing, not only when you use the bayonet, but use the bayonet also to bring the butt round, all various things and ways of using the bayonet.
Was bayonet fighting regarded as very important before the war, did you think, or was
it was an important part of the training, yes. It was an important part of training. And shooting...
Did you practice with the sort of hanging straw bags and things like that?
No.
You didn't do that then?
No.
So it was always with another soldier?
With another soldier. And as I say, with these special rifles where the thing entered in. And, of course, even that, if you give me... So sometimes there'd be competition and you'd be padded a bit in front, because you could hurt a man, if you dig that right into his ribs. But sport was very much encouraged. Sport.
What about the rifle shooting and training? Could you describe the method by which you were taught?
Well, we... until you'd finished your recruit's training and joined the battalion, you never shot with your Lee Enfield rifle. That is, with bullets. There were 303. We had a miniature range on which was attached a can, and there'd be a target, a small target, but in size would represent as it would look at 200 yards. And there's some contraption, I've forgotten really, but when you fired, a pin hit. It's in there. And then, of course, you were given your card after, to show you what kind of a shot you were. And strange to say, I was extremely good. I was a first-class shot. I'll tell you something. If you like to start.